Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied.
If you think that one person has all the answers,
don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two beings who've actually experienced it. I am Lola Blanc.
And I am Megan Elizabeth.
Today, our guest is Killian Allenbacher. He is a visual effects artist in Los Angeles who grew up in a new age Christian organization called the Church Universal and Triumphant. He's going to tell us about growing up believing that the world was ending very soon, living with a group that was building elaborate bomb shelters, enormous bomb shelters, on a compound in Montana, working on the cult's farm as a child, and following the leader Elizabeth Clare Prophet, who claimed to be in communication with spiritual beings called the Masters.
We're also going to talk about the red flags he began to see, how his dad taught him to question everything, and how these critical thinking skills helped him realize he didn't want to be involved anymore.
When he was still just a kid. We'll hear all about that very soon.
Yes, we will.
Why did I turn into a cheesy TV host there? I don't know. Welcome. Maybe that's my true self. I
kind of feel like that. I feel like this is really, really authentic for you, Lola.
God damn it. Is this who I am?
You win a cult. You win a cult.
Oh my God. What cult did I win?
Don't make me think that
Give
fast
me the
on
answers.
My
toes. It's too early for this shit.
Yeah, it's a can't.
Hey, so Megan, what's the cultiest thing that happened to you this week?
I have been noticing in myself a tendency to thinking really in kind of fear circles. Killian's story this week kind of encapsulates what my brain is doing right now. Like, I'm like, everything feels dangerous. I need to get out of here. I need to go live in some town with like 10 people. And I don't know why that's, I mean, I guess I do know why. We live in a mad world, but just a lot of different little pieces of information were thrown into my head this week that all scared me really badly. And now I'm in a total fear place and I want to go hide.
Wait, like what? Can you give me one?
Well, somebody was saying that, I don't even remember what country, but it was on CNN that they've made some missile that'll just make a giant tsunami kill everyone on the West Coast.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, that one got in my head a little bit, you know, stuff like that. Yeah,
just
fearful shit that usually I'm like, okay, like I guess then I'll just die. But for some reason this week, it's making me want to go live on a farm and collect a bunch of weapons.
It's so hard to find the balance between staying informed and living in just a constant state of terror because of the news.
Yes.
I still have not figured out this fucking balance, dude. So my only thing that I know how to do is just to stop looking at it.
Yeah.
Which then I feel like a dumb idiot who doesn't know what's going on, but I'm happier.
Right. You know? I mean, what do you... Yeah.
Yeah, I
it's
know.
It's problematic.
I mean, don't get me started on climate change shit. Because
oh,
every time I look at climate change news, I'm like, what's the point of living?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We just got to be present in our lives and hope for the best.
Oh, my God.
Do the thing. Oh, my God. I don't know. I hear you, though. I feel like this week, almost everyone I know has been in a really, like, a high state of agitation this week for some reason. I don't know what's different about... We've been in a pandemic for over a year now, so I don't know why this week is different. And maybe it's just a coincidence. It just happens to be my friends. But I'm agitated.
Yeah.
I'm on high alert. You're on high alert.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Drugs?
The answer is drugs. You got it. Ding, ding, ding. Okay.
What's the cultiest thing that happened to you this week?
I don't know. I guess probably something pertaining to my all-female horror collective, Fatale Collective.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's mostly good things. It's like, I'm very excited. We brought on a new member, and then we've just brought on, I think, one more member, and they're fucking amazing. I can't remember how to what extent I've described this, but we are an all-female horror filmmaking collective, and we are currently working on our feature anthology. So we've had to add new people into the mix, which is amazing. But as we add new people, I'm like, oh, well, I am obsessed with us. Other people like want to join us. Like, I put out a call and I got like 50 messages about it. And, you know, there's like natural hierarchy sort of form. And we're actually trying to figure that out right now. So it doesn't fall too much on any one person. But I could see how quickly I could join the cult of Fatale. I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's a dope ass cult if there's going to be one. I don't know, man. Group dynamics are really, really tricky because it's like, how do you, as we grow and ideally get more and more women involved, how do we navigate that so that it's very democratic, but also organized? Like, there still needs to be some leadership. There still needs to be some organization. So, right. Yeah, figuring that out and structuring that so that we don't actually become a cult has been really interesting.
I love this, like, laying this groundwork before so that you just, yeah, that's smart.
Dude, you have to, though, because otherwise communication breaks down so fast.
Yeah, it does.
You know, like, if one person emerges as the leader, then other people get resentful. And it's just like, it's really, really complicated. But ultimately, I think it's going to be really, really cool. And if we're in the category of cult in any way, it'll be on the cool ass, dope ass, benign version of
it. Amen. I love it.
Women in horror. Heyo. All right.
Well, let's talk to Killian about how his group collective went bad.
His female horror collective. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Welcome, Killian Ollenbacher, whose name we are pronouncing the Americanized version of.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So, Killian, so you were in a group called, remind us, please.
Church Universal and Triumphant.
Church Whoa. Universal and Triumphant. What a name.
I know, love, right? When they put the words like that in the name.
I know. It's
and it's a whole ass phrase.
It's a sentence. You know exactly what.
Is it triumphant and is it universal?
Yeah. No. I mean, they tried. That's actually how my parents found out about it, because I was born in Germany. And when they went and tried to convert people or get people to join the cult, they called it stumping. I don't know if that's a normal term or if that's a term they made up. But
yeah, I think they made it up.
They did a stumping trip to Germany, and then my parents were kind of hippies, which most people think is an oxymoron that you can't have German hippies, but my parents were proof that you can't have German hippies.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they were always into like alternative things and, you know, all sorts of not weird stuff, but they're into very spiritual stuff. So these people came along and they're like, oh, you know, so they kind of bought into their message, and then they bought into it so much. They're like, oh, like, one of our friends wants to kind of move his business to the U.S. to kind of grow. So my parents were like, well, let's move to the U.S. and move to Los Angeles, because that's where the cult was actually located. And then
so that happened fast.
Yeah.
So imported cult members. Okay.
What were the stumpers like? Who were they?
I was, I think, two or three at that point, so I wouldn't know. But it was just essentially, it was usually cult leader or like a couple of her close people. This is according to my parents. They would essentially just buy plane tickets as a group and then go like fly all over the world. And even in Germany, they had like these alternate belief meetups, you know, where they kind of had these little, you know, where you could learn about Buddhism and lots of things that weren't mainstream religion.
And alternate belief, what a term. Okay.
Yeah. So while they had these things, you know, they had these little conventions, I guess you can call them, so that they had like tarot cards and crystals and basically anything alternative you can think of. And so this cult would kind of look for places around the world where these little meetups were happening and then kind of fly their members there to kind of discuss and hopefully get new members.
So they go to like all the New Age conventions.
New Age, that's the word I was looking
for. Find all the mystical people. Okay, cool. And so your parents were already like into the New Age shit and they see them at a convention? Is that what happened?
Yes.
And they're like, hell yeah, this is my jam?
Well, my mom, especially, my mom has always been very much into anything New Age and anything that can't be proven. And so she was very much into that. Even now, she's still into that, which unfortunately has led her more towards conspiracy theories.
I was just gonna
because
ask that.
They're not provable. Yeah, so, of course, it's got to be true.
Yikes. Man. So your parents are like fully German, but you yourself grew up mainly in America, is that right?
Yeah. When I first moved to the U.S., because my parents did it so suddenly, my dad spoke decent English, like enough to communicate even in his business. And my mom spoke a couple words because, you know, in Germany, you usually always take at least one foreign language, if not two, in school. And so the most common one was, you know, it's usually Spanish, Italian, or English is usually what most people take because they're the closest. And so I went to, like, I was literally thrown into a kindergarten without speaking any English whatsoever. And my parents were like, oh, he'll figure it out. And I mean, it worked. Within like 2 months, I was able to communicate, but it was,
wow,
it was pretty traumatic. I still remember my very first day in kindergarten. I was surrounded by like 20 kids and they were all like, like, I had no idea where this thing. They were just like, rah, rah, you know. It was,
oh, no.
And so but I knew they were asking me questions. So I assumed they were, like, you know, asking my name. But I didn't, I only knew two words, yes and no. So I just said yes. And then, like, everyone starts laughing. And I was like, that was not the right answer.
Oh, my God.
Wait, how did you, like, how did anyone even tell you what to do? I don't even understand how that works.
So the kindergarten teacher, Mr. Klein, actually, I remember his name, was he spoke like basic German, like not enough to communicate in German, but he understood words. So like he can say, you know, sit down or, you know, come here. So
in
the very beginning, he was able to use those words. But anytime I tried speaking to him, and again, because I was so young, I don't know if he knew more German, and it just like was forcing me to speak English. But if I spoke to him in German, he would never communicate back. He would always like respond in English, you know, and I guess just to kind of get me to learn it faster, which it worked.
It worked. Well, look at you. You're bilingual.
Yay.
Or trilingual.
Or no, it only came with bilingual. A few emotional traumas. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Wow.
All right, a little German boy in Los Angeles. So tell us what your life is like. What's this everyday life like? Yeah.
We actually moved to Agoura in the beginning, which was nice. I mean, it was back then Agoura was completely empty. I remember living, like, we had a house, but it was next to giant dirt piles. So I would just ride my bicycle every day, which was amazing, in giant piles of dirt. But, I mean, day to day was pretty normal. We would, like, the cult had its own school, so we would go to school, and it was, I mean, kindergarten and first grade, I don't remember much of a difference. But one of the things that my parents, being German, they were very big on education. So that was one of the things, like, they kind of, even though it was a cult school, they taught a lot of subjects properly. It wasn't just indoctrination school. They actually taught like math, science, and all the important things, which was actually, I appreciate as an adult having learned all that. And
if you guys have your own school, then it must have been pretty big, huh?
Oh, it was huge. They had
really,
and I don't remember where. I mean, again, where it was in Los Angeles, but I think it was somewhere in Malibu, and they had this huge area that was just, I mean, I remember we would drive up to it, and there's this huge grass. Like, I mean, it must have been at least 5 square miles, if not more. Like,
whoa.
It was a giant, giant thing.
Wait, and where was that?
I think it was in Malibu, but
so they had money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a typical cult. So everyone would give the cult leader everything. And so, I mean, yeah, you know, some people didn't have much, but others gave millions.
What was the leader like? What was the belief that he was even...
She. No, it's all good.
Wow, Megan. No. Sexist.
So sexist. So sexist.
Women can be cult leaders too.
Yes, it's true. It's true. What was she like? What was her vibe? I don't get it.
I just want to point out her last name was Prophet, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That is.
Elizabeth Claire Prophet. I remember that. My first impression of her was she was, you know, this very kind and nice motherly type of a person. But the whole cult was built around the fact that she was able to channel like saints through her. And so she would give these talks where like they would possess her, and then so you'd hear the word of these saints and all these other prophets like speaking through her. So that was her whole thing. She had this very like new age, like, oh, I'm mystical and I know things attitude about her. So when we first moved there, because my parents at that point had some money, so they were very close to her in the beginning. My dad was the one that kind of moved away first, but my mom was still really into it. But once she sensed that, like, A, my parents weren't giving her tons of money anymore, and B, like, you know, it was mainly my mom that was, like, really into it, not so my dad. They kind of got pushed out a little bit. But so because the cult was so large by the time I started, I mean, there were hundreds in there already. Like, it's not like you met her on a daily basis. Like, most people never even, like, got to meet her. Like, meeting her was kind of considered a big deal, especially if you got, like, a private meeting type of a thing. So,
oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, like, it was... thinking back on it, especially with what I've looked into, like, other cults, just out of curiosity, like, what are other cults like? It is surprising how large of a cult this really was. And because it's growing up, it was normal. Like, sure, there's, you know, this lady is the one that can channel saints and all this stuff.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, it was something I never really thought of before. So,
yeah. Was it Christian at all, or was it?
Yeah,
okay.
Essentially. I mean, I got, yeah, all the saints were Christian saints. And I mean, essentially it was the Bible. I studied the Bible growing up, and a lot of the saints were like saints from the Bible and other holy figures that throughout history were considered mystical or saint, who ascended to sainthood and stuff like that. I got baptized. I had my first communion. So it had a lot of Christian aspects of it. It was basically, as far as I remember, it was Christianity with everything culty added on top, or more culty.
So, but there's also mysticism on top of the like Christianity.
Yes, very much so.
I would definitely be joining this. So I get it. Your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
You already say
pitch.
That?
Yeah. Yeah, I already say that. Yeah, I mean, it's just, if somebody's like, hey, here's a bunch of wands and stuff, and you can still, I think if I was Christian, that would be the way I would go.
If you were Christian.
Yeah.
So, but there are crystals and stuff. How new age are we getting here?
Well, yes and no. Like, the crystals were never like a part of the actual cult. Most of my memories, I mean, I have a few memories but of Los Angeles, but most of my memories are when they moved to Montana later in the crazy bomb shelter phase, which that's another.
Okay.
Exciting.
But because it was such a large like cult, they would do all these large festivals. And I remember going to going to all these festivals, and they always had like crystal sellers and tarot, like, so all of that stuff was considered like a normal part of it, but it wasn't like an essential part of the cult. It was more like, because, you know, all these mystical things are going on, obviously these crystals and tarot cards are doing things. So
mm-hmm. Right, because I feel like in most Christian religions that stuff is like a big no-no. That's like of the devil, right? Versus
Yes.
Yeah, encouraged to be like sort of incorporated or in a way.
Which is what hooked my mom, especially because she was so new age. And so she was like, oh, and they were always, my parents were very open with religion when they were younger anyway. I mean, my dad was Buddhist for a long time. And during that time in their lives, they were both kind of looking for something like kind of religion, because they were looking into, you know, all these different religions. And none of them held really any meaning for both of them. And so because they were both kind of, my mom especially more new age, but even my dad was more spiritual and less like organized religion. So this was kind of a good melting
combo.
Or meeting. Yes.
Yeah.
A meeting point for them both to be like, oh, I see. Like, it has the religion like aspect, but it also has the metaphysical stuff. And yeah.
I can't believe that it was that big and in Los Angeles initially, and that I've never heard of it. I'm like actually pretty surprised.
Yeah. It was in the early 80s, they were in Los Angeles. The late 80s, they moved to Montana.
Sorry, I just want to one more thing about beliefs here. I'm on the Wikipedia. It says, its beliefs reflect features of the traditions of theosophy and new thought. So theosophy is a word that I did not know until Frank, formerly of Heaven's Gate, was on the podcast. And he said he was big into theosophy, and that was like sort of part of what led him into Heaven's Gate. I don't really know anything about it, but I'm just interested because that is sort of a little common theme here. So it's a religion established in the United States during the late 19th century, founded primarily by the Russian immigrant Helena Blavatsky, another woman, part of an occultist stream of Western esotericism. It teaches that there's an ancient and secretive brotherhood of spiritual adepts known as the Masters, who, although found across the world, are centered in Tibet. These Masters are alleged by Blavatsky to have cultivated great wisdom and supernatural powers. So is it basically like Elizabeth Clare Prophet is one of the Masters? Is that the...
No, she channeled the Masters.
She
Like it was not
what
only
am I
saints,
thinking?
But she would channel the Masters as well. Yeah, she wouldn't say that she was a master.
I see.
Brilliant.
She had epilepsy. I don't know that she had the particular kind that we've talked about on the podcast, which is temporal lobe epilepsy. But temporal lobe epilepsy, which we've talked about before, and I will never stop talking about because it's the most interesting thing in the entire world, is a kind of epilepsy that induces like basically extreme intense religious experiences. So people believe that they're in contact with God genuinely. Anyway, it just makes me wonder. It makes you wonder. Did she have that kind of epilepsy in addition to the other kind that she had, which would cause her to black out periodically? All right. That's the end of my spiel.
No, I mean, I would believe that because even the few times I met her, especially when I was little, I didn't get, my mom would say it's because I'm a Pisces, but I'm very in tune with emotions of other people. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, I never got anything like any bad intent from her. She truly believed it. But that's also kind of why I ended up falling out of it, because even though I knew she believed it, it didn't make sense why, you know, there were certain holes in certain things that just didn't add up to my little child brain that no one could answer. And so like slowly but surely I ended up falling out of it. So
we'll get to that part. Definitely excited to hear that part. So how old are you when the big move happens?
I was 9 years old, I think. And so it essentially became, my dad still had his business in Los Angeles, was still working there. And so my...
What was his business?
He worked for a long time with herbal extracts, which it wasn't a euphemism for drugs or anything. It was actually... It was actually taking, in Europe especially, like they deal more with taking plant extracts as medicines. Instead of Prozac, they use St. John's wort and all these things that, and because in Germany it's actually considered medical, so they actually do, you know, yes, blind studies and all these things.
If somebody replaced my Prozac with St. John's wort, I would slap them.
If you could tell.
Yeah, okay. True. Okay, so he's doing this in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And you guys are, I love Agora Hills, P.S. It's really blown up. I don't know if you've been there lately, but.
It was really scary the first time when I went back there. And like, I hadn't been back there in like 15 years. And yeah. I went back there. And in my like memories, it was like, there were little tiny sections of like suburban areas, like kind of little cul-de-sacs all over, but everything else was like just dirt and like grass.
No more.
Yeah, when I went back, I was like, what is this place? Like, what? It's just like every other part of LA now.
Yeah,
no.
It's crazy.
I haven't been there in 10 years. I remember it being very beautiful as
it
well.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Not so much anymore.
No. So you guys are like, all right, we got to go to Montana.
I found out later the cult was kind of getting blowback from the city, and I think it was Malibu, but they were getting blowback from the city, kind of like, you know, what's this weird thing you guys have going on? And so they decided to kind of move, like they're like, well, we need this giant area, let's go to Montana. And around the same time, they started kind of turning into a doomsday cult, saying like, oh, the world is going to be ending soon. So they're like, well, what's the best place to be? And so, you know, the cult leader like channeled everything she could and was like, all right, the only safe place in the world will be this little area in Montana outside of Livingston. And we're, you know, we're all going to set up this giant compound there and, you know, start building bomb shelters was essentially to survive the apocalypse. And so that's kind of what ended up. This is where, you know, you never know. Was it because of all the blowback from the city that she decided, oh, I suddenly get this message that the world is ending? Right. Or is it kind of like, oh, well, since this is going on, let's go somewhere else. And so, yeah, my mom being my mom was totally all on board with it. And my dad was like, no, like I have a job here, like up in Montana, there's literally nothing. No herbal extract company is going to go to Montana. Like that's so my mom essentially was like, well, I'm moving no matter what. So if you want, and I'm taking the kids with me. So if you want to be part of this family, you're going. So it was only 4 years we're there, but for most of the time, my dad lived in Los Angeles and would fly to Montana every weekend. And just to be part of the family. And like there was no airport even. So he would have to like fly to Bozeman, fly to Livingston, and then drive like 40 minutes to get to like where we lived. Like it was hell for him. I can't imagine.
What was it like for you though? You're 9 and you're like, oh shit, the world's ending. Like how did you feel about it?
So my parents didn't just go, hey, we're all going to die. Like the world's ending. They were very gentle with bringing about, like it wasn't discussed with the kids until we started building the bomb shelters. And then, you know, as kids we go, what's with these bomb shelters? And they're like, well, you know, it was mainly Russia. Like Mikhail Gorbachev is being controlled by the devil and he's going to start the next world war with all his nukes. And because of that, we have to, you know, hide in here. And then I remember like being super concerned about everyone else. I'm like, well, what about the rest of the world? Like, how are they going to fit in here? And, you know, my mom would be like, they can't, it's only us. I'm like, why don't we tell everyone else? You know, I was like, well, we should tell everyone.
And yeah.
That whole thing was, in my mind, it was a lot of fun because these bomb shelters were like the entrances were like 20 feet tall, like some of the bigger ones. Like you could drive vehicles inside them. You walk inside this huge, giant like thing. And then, you know, after that, they had little side corridors and everyone had their own little rooms. And then I remember, they were amazingly nice. I mean, I'm sure they still are there, but
that would have been nice. I would have liked to feel that safe as a child.
Yeah. And it felt like as a giant fort, essentially, like, you know, as a kid, it was so cool.
Right. Yeah. Can I just buy them now? I would like that.
Exactly.
Were people actually like sleeping in them or living in them, or you were still building them?
We were building them. And even after they were built, they were there as an emergency. So essentially what we ended up doing after they were built, we're allowed one Tupperware container. So we all kind of filled one Tupperware container with our important things and change of clothes and socks and stuff like that. And then I remember we all did like a family trip to drop it off at the bomb shelter. And and that was it. And then because my mom was so paranoid and worried about it, she had my dad build a bomb shelter in our actual house as well, like a smaller one in case we couldn't make it to the big one when the bombs went off.
And what year was this?
I want to say 91. It was, yeah. I mean,
how much money do you think all these bomb shelters cost at the end of the day?
Millions upon millions. I know my family put everything they had, and we heard stories of others also putting in millions and millions of I mean, just, yeah.
That everything. Is heartbreaking.
So what's going on with Liz this whole time? I'm calling her Liz now. And what is everyday life like? Do you stay on the compound like all the time?
No. So most people were required to live on the compound, but because my parents were so close with her, like they were allowed to live off the compound. And not that no one could, like if you obviously couldn't afford it, like you couldn't live on the compound, but it was kind of, if you really want to be close in this, you know, member of this thing, you need to live on the compound. And that's why we had our own special bomb shelter in case we couldn't make it to the one on the compound. Cause it was pretty, I mean, Montana is super sparse. So it was close, but it's still, I mean, you have to go down all these dirt roads, drive on a freeway for a while.
Right. And then, bombs are falling.
Exactly.
It's too much.
Brothers and sisters?
I have four sisters.
And were they with you at this time? Like, are they feeling it too?
Yeah. Three of my sisters were with me at the time. And I remember one of my older sisters was really into the church around the time that I was starting to fall out of it. And I couldn't understand it because she would go to like all the seminars and like whenever she would do her like channeling, her and my mom especially like would go there and they would love it. And then around the time I started kind of falling back from it, and usually my dad started using that as an excuse to be like, oh, let me hang out with Killian because he doesn't want to go, you know, so he didn't have to go as much either. So, and then my youngest sisters were, they were too young to even know what was going on most of the time. I remember Anya, my other sister, and I, we raised those two little kids because my parents were always off at the cult doing whatever. Mm-hmm. And my dad was flying back and forth from Los Angeles. So during the week, he was almost never there. And so my mom like would leave us alone and be like, all right, you can just take care of the little ones. And wow. Yeah,
what was she doing all day?
Doing cult stuff is like, that's as far as I know. Like I honestly don't know, because she would, you know, take the car and go off to the compound. And so we would be stuck at home and, you know, just do whatever needed to be done.
I wonder if it's like hard labor. I'm sure it's really hard to keep a place like that running, or if they're just talking.
Does she have some kind of like title or role or something?
There were no titles really. No, it was just if she liked you, like she would invite you to like, you know, private dinners and hang out with her like in person. Like, but other than that, like the only time you pretty much saw her was when she did her channelings and really big events and stuff like that.
Did you watch her do channelings?
I did.
What was that like?
Honestly, it was just the person talking. Like she would stand there, you know, and close her eyes and then like start talking like this. This is the word. And so it wasn't anything like mystical. Like the first time I went there, I really was expecting lights and something amazing and otherworldly, because this was as my parents told me, this was the only person in the world who could channel all these things. So this was obviously a special person. And seeing a person just talking like every single day normal, I was like, all right, she says she does it, but is she really?
Right.
And this is her channeling these otherworldly masters and like having prophecies and stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of, they were kind of themed. So some of them were about
fun.
The future. Some of them were about how to better yourself. Some of them were about, you know, the end of the world. Some of them were about what you can do to help the cult or whatever. And so my mom would talk about, oh, we're going, you know, she's talking about this tonight, or she's channeling this person to discuss, you know, this topic. And so it was a very like schedule. She knew who she was going to be channeling and what they wanted to talk about ahead of time. So every single time.
So it's like regular church sermons, but it just happens to be that she's channeling the masters to do that.
Yeah,
sounds like.
Exactly.
And so unfair.
Yeah, come on. Make someone levitate or something. Yeah,
exactly. Like something special.
A little explosion, like anything. Come on, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, we also had regular church on top of that as well. Obviously, she didn't show up to every single one. So there were, or like, again, I don't know if they're really ordained priests or not, but there were priests that would show up and we would have normal mass. And that's where I would, you know, where I got my first communion and all that stuff. And so it was like her channeling the things was a special thing that wasn't every single day. Like for the day-to-day holy ceremony, she had other priests and other people taking care of all that.
Gotcha.
So did you guys have day-to-day like holy stuff?
Yeah.
I know, like, you're saying it. She didn't do it every day, but you guys had to do basically church every day?
I mean, it wasn't, because with how large the cult was, it wasn't mandatory. It was, you know, you should do this to be a good cult member. Like that's why growing up, I didn't think I was in a cult, because everything I had, like, even when I was younger, cults were this horrible thing that people force you to do all these, you know, really mean things and that people didn't really want to do. And at least growing up, it was very do this if you want to be more involved in the church, but you don't have to do this. So I never felt there was anything forcing. Again, as a child, I never felt that other than my parents forcing me to go to all the church.
Do you feel differently about that now?
No, about that part, no. There was definitely stuff going on later on that, I mean, wasn't surprising considering it was a cult. But, I mean, even looking back, I think the cult preyed on its, you know, its people wanting to feel like part of the family. So it didn't force you to be part of the family, but if you weren't there enough, they would kind of be like, oh, well, let's not.
You'd be edged out a little
bit. And so that coldness, you know, and people join the cults to be part of something, to feel a family connection. And so it kind of pushed those people like to get more involved and closer to it.
Right. I mean, that's usually what happens, right? It's usually not anybody actually being, you know, gunned to their head, forced. It's more like, right. You don't have to do this, but if you don't do this, you won't be in the inner circle. And if you're not in the inner circle, like, fuck, you might be fucked. You know?
Yeah. And growing up, that was my impression, was cults force people to do things with a gun, like, you know, to your head, like, you do this or else. So it wasn't until later I was like, oh, I was in a cult? Okay.
That's a lot to unpack. Yeah. Was there a point when you totally were all in, like completely believed it when you were little, or were you always a little bit like, huh?
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a point when I was all in. I mean, again, I was young. I grew up with it just like any child in any religious household. You know, that's what you do. So you just go do the day-to-day without really questioning it. I started going to Bible school because it was kind of the Christian cult anyway, so we actually read the Bible and we did Bible studies, but then they always added in all the stuff with all the masters and saints and all that stuff. It wasn't until I started doing that I really started questioning beliefs. And a large part of that is due to my dad being really big into science and always forcing me to question things. And, you know, whenever I would ask him something, he would not just give me the answer. He would force me to kind of reach a conclusion, like by kind of prodding me, which as a kid, I hated that so much. I was like, that's probably what I want to know. But because of that, it helped me, you know, grow up where I was always questioning something and always expecting answers from something. And so once the Bible studies started, you know, they were just normal people, moms or, you know, normal day-to-day people. They didn't have any mystical knowledge, but as a kid, I didn't know that. So when I would ask them questions like, why does this master do this instead of that? They wouldn't know. And I'd be like, why don't you know? Like, who knows these things? And it was little bits and pieces like that, you know. And then I asked my parents one day, like, how come all the saints speak to her and no one else? And I was told, oh, she is just holy and pure that, like, they could do that. And I was like, well, what's so dirty about me that, like, I haven't done anything bad? Like, why am I not hearing this? And so there was a while I actually tried. I went to, like, that's when I was the most into it. I was trying to see if I really got into the services and did everything, if I could become, like, holy enough to start hearing these voices.
Okay,
and
walk us through this. You're outside sitting there. You just sit there for a while, like, I'm going to hear a voice soon? Or what would that look like?
Well, yeah, part of it was I'm going to sit here and hopefully I'm going to hear a voice soon. Or, I mean, I was young, so most of it was like, I'm going to do everything my mom says because, you know, that's what a good person does. I'm going to, you know, do all my chores. I'm going to, you know, when I go to the service, I'm not going to, like, just fidget. I'm going to really listen and really pray really hard with that, you know, all my might.
Yeah,
so it was this trying so hard to kind of prove
Holy
to whoever was
shit.
Up there that I was a good person. And
right.
Like after a while I was like, I mean, that's weird. I'm not hearing anything.
You're such a cool kid. I think I just accepted that only prophets get to talk to God. Regular people don't get to talk to God.
Yeah, he was like, no, I will do it too. I just want to know what you thought you could, like what you were doing that you thought I was going to start talking. I don't know. It's so fun. It's so fun.
Did you ever interact with Elizabeth directly?
I met her as a child, but again, I was too young to really like at that point, I didn't even know she was the cult leader, like, because my, like, especially in the very, very beginning, my parents were actually really close with her. And because of that, she was just this nice lady, like a friend of my parents. And so it wasn't until I was like 10 or 11, I was like, oh, she's like the cult lead. Like, she's like the big,
she's the, you know, big thing.
Instead of just one of my parents' friends that would come over and, you know, would hang out every now and then.
So she didn't seem special or have a mystical glow around her.
No, no.
Damn it.
I think maybe that's what kind of also in the, you know, tended to be like, well, she's just a normal person, like in my mind. She wasn't, you know, apart from someone telling me she was the leader and her telling us she can hear all these voices, like she never exhibited anything that made me as a kid go, oh, she is special. Like,
I wonder how much expectations are involved, because I feel like when somebody is built up to you in advance as being this special mystical prophet person, or at least it seems this way for a lot of people we've talked to, it really colors that like initial meeting. Whereas if you meet them and they just seem like a normal person and then you find out they're a prophet, I imagine that's like, yeah, just a totally different experience.
Yeah. And if you go to a movie and you have super high expectations and it doesn't live up to them, it's a terrible movie. But if you go in with zero expectations, you're like, yeah, I was entertained. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So you're still in school. You're living your life. You're a kid. You're in a regular house. But you just happen to think that nuclear war is impending.
Yeah. Are you just like so anxious? Do you need to be on? I would need to be on a lot more pills than Prozac if someone was like, they're going to bomb you any minute. Were you okay with this information?
No, I wasn't. I mean, when I first heard it, I was freaking out. And every single time we left, I was like, is it going to be safe? Is it going to happen? And that's kind of, I also kind of what helped when my dad was like, it's not going to happen. Like right now, like it'll be years from now, you know, whereas everyone else was like, oh, it's, you know. And so my dad, trying to be a good dad, was like, and try to get me to relax. Like, it's going to be years and years from now if it happens, you know? And so,
did he believe it or did he not really believe it anymore?
At that point, he was starting to fall out of it. And that's also, yeah, around the same time, like, you know, all the little stories started coming out of people that had left. And of course, they were all dismissed as, you know, people that were jealous of her powers and all that.
Right.
And not understanding her or something. But before that, I mean, my day-to-day was, it was weird because it was in Montana and it was a cult environment. So we would do church service, and then I remember I would work on the farm. They had big farms. And so I would, you know, sometimes be harvesting lettuce or radishes or all that stuff. And so we would all be working outside, which was, yeah, a lot of fun. That's where my first giant injury with a knife came.
Almost sliced
my finger off.
Oh my god.
I had a banana knife and I was cutting lettuce and I was like 8, I think. And I just went whoosh, and like sliced through two of my fingers. Yeah, it was little. It was the first time I was like, oh my god, it's not stopping bleeding. Like, it's, yeah. But I mean, other than that, that was the only like terrible moment ever. But the rest of the time, it was literally you just working on a giant farm with all these other people. And I think that stuff usually happened on the weekends when we weren't going to school. So on the weekends, it was go to.
No. So you would wake up on Saturday and you'd have to go to work?
Yeah. Like, but it was, you know,
you
for the good
it.
Of the cult. So, yeah.
You well, said it was fun?
It was. I never liked doing it, of course, as a kid, but, you know, uh-huh. Especially during the phase where I was like, I'm going to become a good person. I was like, yes, I'm going to really get into like cutting this lettuce and picking all of my radishes. And
going to be the best lettuce cutter.
Exactly.
and then the masters will talk to me. Mm-hmm. This is still a regular school, but like on the compound.
Yeah. So the school in the beginning was on the compound, but because the cult kept on growing and growing, and so that at one point they kind of made it so that the school on the compound was only for the people living on the compound. But then they set up like satellite schools as well. And wow. So later on, for most of my time, I ended up going to like one of the satellite schools, which was like, I thought it was a normal school. I thought everyone had to learn Latin and learn like other languages, like, but apparently that wasn't a thing.
Nope.
It's like,
But, some places.
But believe it or not, as much as I remember being in the third grade, having to learn Latin and hating it, but it did help me a lot with my understanding the English language and figuring out how everything worked. So, I mean, it wasn't all bad.
Latin's cool. I wish I had learned Latin.
I took 5 years of it, and I don't think I learned a thing. So, anyway.
Nice. I can say some Harry Potter words that seem like maybe there's Latin related. I don't know. Expelliarmus. So Dad's starting to question. You're starting to question. People are leaving. Are there specific rumors that like something bad happened?
Yeah. I remember the worst one was there was another guy who had given millions and millions to the cult, and he ended up asking her, like his daughter ended up getting sick from something. So he asked for, you know, like a couple $100,000 to pay her medical bills. So the cult leader refused. She was like, no. And so of course that guy left, you know, and I think he also went to like the newspapers and there he was, you know, trying to sue, but because it was a religion, like considered one, like it was almost impossible. And so I remember they were like lawyering up because my parents would talk about it, how like this horrible evil person is suing her, you know, and all these things. But it wasn't until later that like I was like, oh, I guess he just wanted to save his daughter and the cult leader was being a horrible person. So there's a lot of little things like that where people would, you know, little stories where people would give money or they would slight her in some way and they'd get kicked out, you know, and then there were like stories of her having like orgy parties, like little things like that here and there.
Just a little orgy party. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just a little bit. I mean, it's normal for cult, right?
Do you think she was having orgy parties?
I honestly, I wouldn't put it past her as what I know from people, especially like people in power and like how they handle that and how they feel about it. I mean, it makes you feel even more powerful and better, all these people willing to do things for you. But for her personally, I have no clue whether or not she would.
I mean, it seems like generally that's the deal.
Yeah.
But then you add the Christian thing to it and then it's like, oh, maybe not. I wonder.
Yeah.
Since when do Christians not have orgies?
Well,
hella orgies.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
When do Christians not give money to save someone's dying child?
Right. I mean,
so you're all, like halfway out the door.
No, I wasn't even halfway out the door. I'd say I was about
32%.
Yeah, like very little. Like it was the beginnings of the questioning these things. And it wasn't until I had like a real heart to heart with my dad. I must have been 12 years old probably, I think. I asked him all these questions about why she can channel and he doesn't, and all these little inconsistencies with, like, because while we were studying the Bible, like, they would add in all their other stuff with all their saints and all that stuff. And, you know, there were so many little holes here and there and everything going on. And essentially, like, the end of the conversation, my dad was like, you have to make this choice yourself. I can't tell you what to believe. Like it's, you know, my dad once again telling me you have to decide for yourself. I can't give you the answers. And so that essentially was the conversation that led me onto the road to being totally out of it. It was, you know, in a matter of 6 months later, I was like, yeah, this doesn't make any sense to me. Why is all this going on?
Wow. That's so cool that your dad encouraged you to question. I feel like that is kind of rare.
Yeah.
Even outside of cults,
it's incredible. Like as much as it was infuriating as a little kid, like it's really, I mean, yeah, helped shape like everything that I am today. Just because I still look at everything and I question everything, because like no matter how good something sounds or how bad something sounds, you know, there's always two sides and there's always something going on, and you have to be able to step back and look at something objectively to be able to figure out what's going on and not, you know, yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. Mm. Was there a final straw for you?
No, not even. It was a very like just just kind of slowly falling out of it. Like at that time, my mom was super into it and my older sister still was. And so it was a very slow, like they would be going, you know, hey, we're going to this tonight. And I'll be like, oh, why don't I stay and watch the little ones tonight? Or why don't, you know, I have a wood project to work on. Or, you know, I would just kind of start coming up with excuses. And, you know, towards the end, I remember a few times my mom like would force me to go. She's like, oh, you haven't been to service in forever. You are going now. Mm-hmm. You know, we are going as a family. And so, yeah, it was a slow process. But towards the end, it was very much, yeah, I was no longer believing anything. And yeah, which made it really strange because my mom was so into it. And she believed so strongly that it was, yeah. But I think the final straw that kind of helped completely was at that point in my parents' lives, since my dad, after flying back and forth from Montana to Los Angeles for like 2-3 years, he just couldn't do it anymore. So he stopped working. So for like a couple of years, my parents just lived off of credit cards essentially and whatever money they had saved up. And then it got to the point where my dad was like, if we have no money, we can only afford to live here for like another couple months. And then there's nothing, like living in Montana, being part of the cult doesn't, you know, we gave all our money to build bomb shelters. Like there's nothing else coming in. After a long talk, they're like, all right, let's move back to California. Because my dad was like, well, I need to be, California was kind of the place where alternative medicine was kind of like a big center of, especially, you know, they have the conference every year down south in Anaheim. That's like every year there's this huge conference, or at least used to be. and so it was just known as that's the place to be. So at that point in my dad's career, he decided to become a consultant and kind of, you know, step out of the actual managerial role. But once we moved away from it, like it was my dad kind of completely stepped out of it because he didn't have to kind of pretend anymore to be part of it. And then once I saw my dad had completely snapped out of it, I was like, oh, okay, I can be my own person now too. Like I don't have to be part of this to make my family, like to be part of my family. I can kind of be my own. And so, yeah, it was really thanks to my dad that I was able to so quickly step out of it. And the fact that I was able to question at an early age, because I was one of those kids that I literally believed everything like my parents said, like my parents said to never lie. So I never lied. Literally, I never lied growing up. And it wasn't until, I still remember the incident. My mom had a watch. I was like eight or nine, and I ended up breaking the watch. And so my mom went to, I don't remember, the store, Target or something, to return the watch. And so my mom goes, you know, was talking to the lady to return it. And she's like, oh, this watch stopped working. And I was like mortified. I was like, Mom, that's not true. I'm the one that broke it. Like, I thought my mom was just misunderstanding the situation.
God, that's hilarious.
And so I was like, no, Mom, like I'm the one that broke it. Like, it's not, it wasn't an accident. Like I'm at fault here. And my mom just flipped out. Like she went like angry. She's like, get into the car. Like just yelling, like forced me to walk. Cause of course, like I was totally pointing out to the employee that she was lying her ass off. And so remember like that moment, I was just stunned. I was sitting in the car by myself going, wait, but she said to never lie. And why'd she get mad? Like, and so like that was, again, also the moment where I was like, oh, my parents aren't infallible. Like there's something going on with them that they're also not always telling the truth. So because of that, if my dad hadn't been the one that kind of always pushed me to question everything, I would have just been like, oh, I believe you and everything's perfect and the cult is the best thing ever. So,
yeah. Did your mom move back to California with you guys?
Yeah, it ended up, I mean, essentially it was my dad kind of said, I'm not going to be flying, because my mom was like, oh, you can just get a job in Los Angeles or whatever and continue flying. And he's like, no, like that's hell. Like that's, you know, because even when he was still doing it, he was only working 4 days a week. And because the rest of the time he was traveling, he would spend a day or two with us on the weekend, if that. And then, I mean, usually only a day and a half because it was, you know, he'd fly in late Friday night, would be exhausted, and then spend Saturday with us. But even then, he had been working and traveling, so half the time he didn't even have the energy to, like, hang out with us. And so, he said, like, no, we're moving 100%. And I think also a large part of it was they didn't have the money without selling their current house. And so, I mean, because of finances, ended up being like, no, we're leaving this whole thing behind. So
I was just going to ask if your mom stopped believing.
Many years later, slowly fell out of it for at least another 10 years. I feel like she was kind of really into it, and not really. She was still into it, all the beliefs, and with more and more of these rumors started spreading around. So she was kind of like, oh, maybe the person isn't like the best, but the beliefs are still on point, you know, that. And then it wasn't until about 10 years or so later that she was like, stop doing that, and then found some crystals or tarot cards or pendulums and went into that instead.
But she's guiding her own practice now, I imagine, right? Not being led by another prophet lady?
No.
good. What do your parents think about the whole situation now?
Well, that's kind of a tough one, right? Because my dad, he's the kind of person to try to live his life without regrets. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we've talked a lot about it where, I've been like, well, would you change it? And he's like, well, I mean, of course I would change it if I could, you know, because I remember when I was, I must've been 14 or something. And I had a conversation with a dad. I said, you know, if Ani and I had said, we're staying with you in Los Angeles, would you have, you know, stayed with us, just the two of us? And he's like, well, yeah, like that would have been fine. I just didn't want to have no kids, you know, and we could have all flown together, you know. So, but then, I mean, he always says, but since we can't change the past, I have to accept that we made our choices. We tried to do what we thought was right, but, you know, we're still human after all. Whereas I think my mom is very much like, oh, it's fine, whatever, you know, whatever happens, it was meant to happen. And we're, my dad is, it's very hard, tries very hard not to be bitter about it, I think.
I'm bitter about it. Are the bomb shelters still there? Like, what happened with they are?
I'm sure they must be, because as far as I know, there's still a tiny, like, the cult leader has died. I know that. And she had two or three children, and none of them wanted anything to do with her. They were like, no, this is nuts.
Because
she was kind of, in the beginning, grooming them to take over. Like, there was a few times I remember she would give her things, and her son was, like, sitting next to her. Like, she was setting him up to be, like, kind of take over. And so, but I'm pretty sure the kids wanted nothing to do with it. And so there's still kind of like how my mom was, where, you know, oh, the person failed, but, you know, we still kind of, all these beliefs are still kind of good. So there's a really tiny group still keeping it together, but I don't know who owns those bomb shelters now.
One day it will be me.
Yeah.
When I'm a multimillionaire, I will buy the bomb shelters.
The best part was because in our house, since we had our own bomb shelter, we had our house, and then we had a garage that was like 30 feet away, and there was actually a tunnel to get from the bomb shelter under our house. We can crawl up into the garage, and there was a big lookout tower. Like, that was only like 20 or 15 feet high, but from our bomb shelter, you can crawl up to this lookout tower to see if the world was really destroyed.
Wow.
So I remember as a kid, that was the best place to play, because it wasn't giant, because ours was smaller. So it was like, you know, you had to crawl through it, but still, it was a tunnel, which
went tunnel, like 20 feet. Sign me up. Yeah.
Dude, hell yeah. It's like, it's Kimmy Schmidt, but more fun, because you got a tower.
Exactly.
Dude, a bomb shelter party sounds really fun. I feel like that would be like the best.
That would be amazing.
It's like a combination of a field party and a rave.
Yeah. This is not relevant to what we're talking about, but there is a bomb shelter I saw, or a house with a bomb shelter underneath, that I saw for sale in Las Vegas once. And it had it was this huge, expansive, like, underground, like, basically warehouse, but it was decorated to simulate the outdoors. So it had fake grass, fake skies, fake trees, little ponds. So fucking cool and weird.
Wow.
I want to have a party there.
Weird.
Once we can have parties again, which will be soon. That's cool. Well, Killian, so do you feel like you've learned any lessons from this experience? How do you feel about it? How are you doing now?
Never trust anyone. No, I mean, I'm sure it scarred me in ways I'm not aware of and affected me. But for the most part, because I was like so young for most of it, for me, it was just kind of part of growing up. You know, you work on a farm during the weekends, and because school was so normalized, yes, I went to Bible study, but you know, later on in life, all my friends like also went to Bible study school when they were younger. So it wasn't like my day to day, even though like the individual things were a little weird, like my day to day kind of was kind of the same. Well, except for the fact that I wasn't allowed to watch TV or listen to music, rock music, especially was the music of the devil, obviously. We all know this. And so like that really screwed me up because once I started going to normal schools, like everyone would start talking about TV shows. And they're like, oh, growing up, did you ever watch this? And I was like, what's that? Like, no, never seen that. And so other than that, I always felt like I had a normal childhood as far as, you know, compared to everyone else. Because even though, like, I had these weird outcroppings, like, yeah, we were in bomb shelters, but we didn't actually live there. So it wasn't, right. You know, it right. wasn't, I still lived in a house and still went to a school. So
right. So the constant fear of nuclear war didn't scar you permanently, you don't
no,
think?
No, no.
Okay, that's good.
Wow, that is such a cool story.
I think you're our first bomb shelter guest. Congratulations.
Wow. Well, glad to be the first bomb shelter guest.
You win that game that everyone wants to win. What do you do now? What do you do for a living?
I'm a visual effects artist. So
cool.
I do post-production in on television shows and movies.
Nice. Cool. You can grow up in a cult and have a regular, cool job. Look
exactly.
at that.
Exactly.
I mean, I just want to talk. There's so many similarities between how I grew up and how you grew up. It's probably the most similar story to mine, oddly. So I'm really? Just really going to talk to you someday and see if we have all the same psychological illnesses, because you seem to be doing way better with all of it.
With the Prozac, I'm with you on that one. So
oh, okay, great. Yeah,
we
okay,
have
okay,
that
okay.
in common, at least.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh my God. I mean, every word out of your mouth, I was just like, "That's what happened to me," and not. Blah, blah, blah. So cool. So cool.
Yeah, if you ever buy Jenny's, come by. We'll have some wine together.
I will. She's so fun. I need to come
see it. Thought you meant the ice cream place, and I was really excited, but you didn't. So whatever.
We'll bring Jenny's to Jenny, Lola, and then we'll go hang. It'll be fun.
So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
All righty then. I just realized I had a dream that we had music cues in our... This is not interesting.
This is the cult of telling people your dreams even when you know that they don't care. I'm the president of that cult. Go on.
I dreamed we had a fancier podcast with like really cool music cues that would come in right at this point. That was my dream. Maybe one day this dream will become real. This is what I dream about, Megan. All I think about is work. Okay, so here's the question. You actually kind of said this in the interview though, but would you join the Church Universal and Triumphant, do you think?
What did I say during the interview?
Basically, it's like a Christian group, but it's very New Agey, and they go to like crystal fucking conventions.
Right. Yeah, I would be all in. Yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, because it just sounds like fun, and I feel like my psyche is 1 second away from agreeing to go build a secret world in Montana. Like, I'm that scared. So yeah, I could get into that.
We should not think it's as cool as we do that those bomb shelters exist.
True.
Like, why do we think it's so cool? It just sounds like
I don't know.
I feel like I would be like a little kid going into a treehouse in an enormous
about
bomb shelter underground.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I'm like, what do they look like? Where are they? I've told people. People are like, that's so cool. And then I'm like, no, it really is. Here's the deal. And, you know, I'm obsessed.
Wait, do you mean with Killian's group's bomb shelter yes. specifically? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Not just going around constantly telling people about bomb shelters in general.
No. Like just this week, you know, I've had a few conversations with people where I'm like, can you fucking believe this shit? And also, how do we get there? Because it's just crazy.
I mean, I really am tempted to do some detective work and like go on a fucking Montana road trip because that sounds so fun. Do a shoot there.
We
can
have
you imagine?
To.
Yes. Maybe when we do our TV show, that's one of the places we'll go.
That'd be so cool.
We don't have a TV show, guys, but we might at some point. You don't know.
Yeah, no one has specifically said that we don't ever.
Except me right now saying that we don't, but hopefully.
No, but nobody said that we can't forever.
Sure, right. Yeah, someone's going to give us money to go to bomb shelters in Montana. Please, that's what
obviously.
We want. And to take ayahuasca with fucking shamans.
God, it's so good.
All right, well, this has been a delightful time.
It truly has. Thank you guys so much for listening. And you know the drill. Remember to follow your gut. Watch out for red flags. And never,
ever trust me.